Hey there, my name is Gary Sims and this is Gary Explained. Now, for the longest time I've wanted to make a video about RISC-V because I think there are some important issues that need to be addressed and some important things that need to be explained. However, I delayed doing it because people's comments below my videos and other places on the internet so frustrated me about what they were saying about RISC-V that turned into a kind of a negativity. And I didn't want to come over in a negative way about RISC-V because if you understand what it is and what it's trying to do, it's great. But when you try to understand it in the wrong light, if you misunderstand it, then actually it can be quite frustrating. Eventually, I've made the video because I just had to have a reference material out there that I could point people to when they make inaccurate comments about RISC-V. Now, I made the video and it was 40 minutes long. 40 minutes, 40 minutes long. And I thought to myself, no one's going to want to watch a video 40 minutes long about RISC-V. But I have the material. So what I decided to do is to split it into four separate videos. And I'm hoping that because they're kind of 10 minutes each long, that in these smaller chunks, people might be willing to watch them. So this first video is called Is RISC-V Open Source Hardware? Now, once we do this first video, do come back to me at the end of this video and I'll tell you about the other three. But let's really get into this now. So if you want to find out about RISC-V and is it open source hardware, please, let me explain. Okay, so let's get cracking. So really the question is, what is RISC-V and is it like Linux for hardware? And of course, the idea is that Linux has brought such a great revolution to software that we use today, that if this can be reproduced for hardware, then that will radically change the computers that we use over the next few years. So what is RISC-V? Well, RISC-V is a free and open ISA, or instruction set architecture. So basically what that means is that when a CPU needs to run its machine code, it sees a sequence of ones and zeros. Now, what do those ones and zeros mean? Does that particular pattern mean load a register from memory, or does it mean jump to another place? Does it mean compare two numbers? Okay, and every instruction set architecture has a different way of treating those different ones and zeros. Now, I have a whole video on designing your own instruction set architecture here on this channel, and I recommend you watch that if you are interested some more. Now, the RISC-V Foundation has a board of directors comprising of seven representatives from some really big companies here. Look, Google, Nvidia, NXP, of course, University of California, Berkeley, because that's where, of course, RISC-I and RISC-II came from, and Western Digital. So there's some very big names behind RISC-V. But we have to ask ourselves the question, do we have a lack of ISAs? Historically, is this something that we are missing? And of course, the answer is no. If we go right back to the days of kind of, you know, the Commodore 64 or the BBC Micro, we had the 6502, that was 8-bit. If you were a ZX Spectrum fan, then you had, of course, the Zilog Z80. Then going forward, of course, we had the Motorola 68000. And then today, of course, we have the Intel x86, starting with the 8086, the 8286. 6, 8, 3, 8, 6, and then of course that went from 32-bit to 64-bit. There was Alpha from Digital Equipment Corporation, DEC, that was 64-bit. There's MIPS, which is still around today, and we'll talk about that in a moment, 32-bit and 64-bit. There was Intel's failed attempt at the Itanium, 64-bit. There's Power, which is kind of this family that included PowerPC in the past. It's used by IBM today in a lot of their mainframes, including inside Watson, which of course has been very popular for demonstrating IBM's machine learning capabilities. Spark, that we found in the Sun workstations. There was VAX, and then of course there is still today ARM on 32-bit and 64-bit. But you're probably thinking, yes, but Gary, none of those were open source. They were all proprietary. And that's true. In their day, they were proprietary. But today, RISC-V is not the only open source instruction set architecture. Spark is fully open, non-proprietary, and royalty-free. Look at that, Spark. From all those times with the Sun workstations, today it's completely non-proprietary and royalty. In fact, the Spark instruction set is published as an international standard. Look at that there. Okay, and now we're talking about MIPS. MIPS, of course, been around for a long time. Under Wave Computing's MIPS open program, now remember, MIPS got bought by Wave Computing from Imagination when Imagination had the whole problem with Apple dropping their GPUs. They sold the MIPS department over to Wave Computing, and now it's open. Participants have full access to the most recent 32-bit and 64-bit MIPS architecture free of charge with no licensing or royalty fees. So there is another whole kind of historically well-known mature instruction set architecture that is free. And then this is an interesting one I found, J2, which is an implementation of Hitachi's Super H ISA. This processor here, J2, is an open processor which is royalty-free and patent-free under the BSD license. So there are lots of alternatives to RISC-V if people wanted something purely because it was an open source instruction set architecture. Now, one of the common misperceptions about RISC-V is that it's open source hardware. And this is the first thing I want to really get us to understand. This is from the RISC-V FAQ from the RISC-V website. If a company builds a RISC-V implementation, that means they build a RISC-V chip, is it required to release source code for the RISC-V core? No. The source code can be completely closed. So this is the first thing you have to understand. The license for RISC-V is very, very open in the sense that actually anybody can take that RISC-V instruction set architecture, build a processor, and they're under no obligations to tell anybody about what's inside that processor, how they built it, what's the internals of it. They can just license it and sell it and do whatever they want with it, exactly like they do with other instruction set architectures, and we'll talk more about this in a minute. Designers are free to develop proprietary or open source. Doesn't mean open source, you know, people can, you know, companies can release their source code if they want to, for commercial or other uses as they see fit. The RISC-V Foundation encourages all implementations that are compliant with the specification. So there is the option of publishing the internals of your RISC-V processor, but it's not an obligation. So let's get this straight in our minds. If you see a RISC-V processor anywhere, in a board, in a development situation, that doesn't necessarily mean it is an open source hardware solution. And then to kind of nail that point home, while there are many open source cores listed on the RISC-V website, none of them can run Linux. Okay, the only two cores on the RISC-V website that can run Linux are not open source. Now, one of them is from Sci5. Sci5 is kind of seen as the shining light in the RISC-V world, but it makes its money by designing cores and then licensing them for money, okay, to chip makers in the same way that other companies like Arm and other companies do at the moment. So the business practices of Sci5 are exactly the same as other chip designers and chip IP, intellectual property designers, that we see today. Another example is Andes Technology, and this was for a press release I read just 2 days ago. It's another RISC-V designer. They added 60 licensing agreements for their RISC-V processors during the first half of 2019. 60. So these people are doing well. They are managing to get 60. Now, I've got no problem with Sci5 being licensing their designs. I've got no problem with Andes Technology licensing. That's absolutely fine. If they can make money, if they can run a business, if they can employ people, if they can keep those engineers happily employed, keep their families safe and happy, I am delighted. But let us understand what it really is. This is the same as any other commercial operation. They are taking chip designs that they are making themselves, and they are licensing that IP to other people. Sci5 and Andes Technology make most of their money not by using open source chip designs. They are using the open source RISC-V instructions and architecture, but their designs themselves, they sell for money. Now, there are other cores that are not listed on the RISC-V website, and that includes the Indian University from Madras, I think. The I'm probably going to pronounce this right, Shakti processor. Now, that can boot Linux, and that is, as far as I know, completely open source. So here we see the counterpoint between commercial operations like Sci5 and Andes Technology, who are designing and licensing, selling the IP to other companies, just like people have done in the semiconductor industry for decades, and a university like this one that is trying to build RISC-V processors from an academic point of view. Now, one of the comments I have read often is that with open source hardware like RISC-V, we will know what's on the chip, so there won't be any back doors. Well, if a company makes a RISC-V processor, that doesn't mean you know what's on the chip. Okay, just because something is RISC-V rather than ARM or rather than Intel or rather than whatever, you don't know what's on the chip. Even if a company releases all the source codes for a chip, so there is all the information so that you could build that chip yourself, you still don't know what's on the production version. There's no way guaranteeing that what they have released and what is on the chip are the same thing. Why? Because at some point, this design has to be turned into a physical chip. Okay, and that requires a fabrication plant, and those cost billions of dollars, and you have to make an order and say, I want you to start making me this 7-nanometer, extreme ultraviolet light process chip, please, and that costs a lot of money. So there is a transition from a design to a physical chip. And at that point that it becomes a physical chip, you don't know what's on there. That doesn't mean there won't be what's on there. We assume that today what's on Intel, what's on ARM, what's on AMD, what's on all these other chips, we assume that what's on there is what they have said is on there. But just because it's RISC-V, that doesn't change that situation. Now here's another interesting thing I thought I'd mention is that, is it free? In the real world, is Linux free? Well, the answer is no, of course, because Linus Torvalds was paid $1.6 million in 2016. We don't think we have data for 2017 or 2018, but in 2016 it was declared that he received a salary of $1.6 million, and I think he earned every single dollar of it. I don't begrudge him that money at all. Congratulations and well done, Linus. But that's a lot of money. So you have to remember that when people are talking about RISC-V and all the free, it's all free, everything's free. Well, nothing's free. People have to eat. People have to pay their mortgages. People need to be able to buy clothes. People have families to support. And Linus here is getting a good salary, and congratulations to him. But, you know, nothing is free. Okay, now Linus started off by doing it all as a project, and and that was great, and it developed into something absolutely amazing. But if we want RISC-V to be something absolutely amazing, people are going to have to get paid money. Okay, so don't have this idea of it, oh, it's all free. Now, you might be using Linux for free. You might be using, OpenOffice for free or LibreOffice for free or whatever you might be using, but actually someone's paying for it somewhere. But they're allowing you to use it without paying anything. Now let's take, for example, again, Sci-5, RISC-V startup. It announced recently an additional $65 million in funding, some of which, and this is why it was in the headlines, came from Qualcomm, and so far it has raised $125 million. So if you want to build a chip design company, then licensing's a RISC-V chips, you're going to need a lot of money. And here it's showing $125 million so far, and I'm sure that number's going to go up over time. So microcontroller designs, which are much simpler and low-end, full-blown processors with an MMU in it, in a memory management unit that can do things like a protected memory and can run Linux, might succeed from universities and even via open source community projects. But competitive processors cost big money. 125 million, 1.6 million for Linus. We are talking big money here. So don't have a delusion about how you think that magically there's just going to be these amazing RISC-V processors that compete with Intel and ARM and AMD, and they all just happen because some girl is doing some hardware hacking in their living room late at night. That ain't going to happen. Okay, so there you have it. There's my first video on RISC-V. There are three more to follow. The next one is about what goes into designing a RISC-V processor, including the microarchitecture aspects, extensions to RISC-V. If you're going to design an SoC, then there are things like GPUs and DSPs and other things to incorporate into that. The third video is about compliance with the RISC-V specification and the danger of forking RISC-V. And then the fourth video is about my predictions about what will happen to RISC-V over the next few years. So I said, this is the first of four videos. I really do hope you enjoyed it, and I guess I'll see you in the next one.